Kelsey, compulsive overeater, anorexic, bulimic.
Hi, Kelsey.
And anorexic and bulimic. Got to make sure I get that in. So I am really happy to be here. I am also really, really, really happy for the Serenity Prayer, and then I get to ask for what I need today. I'm going away this weekend, and it's already halfway through the day on Saturday, and I'm here because my fiance and I had, this was the only weekend we had to go away, but I had this commitment, and so I sat down and I said the Serenity Prayer, and I realized that what I could not change is that I had made this commitment, but what I could change was asking for a higher up space in the order. And I'm really grateful that I got to do that today. And that I understand that me showing up for a commitment is me saving my butt. And I'm so grateful for that awareness today. So I was asked to focus on my anorexic and bulimic part of my story. So I will do my best to focus on that. And I guess I will just start from the beginning. So I have seen my mom eat maybe 30 to 40 meals in my lifetime. I do not know when her night eating / anorexia started, but I've heard that it had to do with the tragedy that she experienced when I was an infant. So I do not know if I actually physically came into being as a human being with my mom restricting food or not. But it's very possible that I didn't have enough food as I was becoming a human being before being born. So I grew up with an anorexic mother, and I was always told that I couldn't eat the same amount of food as my older brother and my dad because I was younger. But I didn't really have any other plate to match, so to speak. So I very quickly found a way to manipulate my family so I could get as much food as I wanted. My earliest memory is being like 3 years old and eating cereal with milk and sugar and not having enough milk for the cereal so I could get more sugar, and then not having enough cereal for the milk that was left over so I could get more milk. And then I did that with like chips and salsa and like various other pairings that I, you know, it was never the same amount, so I always had an excuse to ask for more. But the whole reason of doing that was so I could continue to put sugar on to the cereal. And, you know, my mom would always bring me as much food as I asked, and my dad would always bring me as much shame that came along with as much food as I asked. And, you know, I currently in my recovery journey, I'm really addressing the alcoholic problem of the home that I grew up in. And what is becoming very apparent to me as I, you know, take steps in the other fellowship that I'm in right now, is that my mom's anorexia was so hard for my codependent father to deal with that it was actually easier to just call out how much food I was eating than address this 90-pound woman who was running around doing all the chores, making sure everybody else had what they had, smoking cigarettes, drinking coffee, you know, all that stuff. And, you know, I remember being like 8 years old and being with my mom out on a shopping trip, and we would have to, you know, I would have to get lunch and then feeling fat because she wasn't eating and I was. And by eight, I was already taller than her and weighed more than her and all that stuff. And so the comparing of my body and the comparing of my food started very early, and it was pertinent throughout my home life and my school life and everything, because I could never be as small as my mom, and I can never eat as little as my mom. And I discovered dieting in like the sixth grade or so, because I had some friends that were doing a very popular weigh and pay program, and it was from age 11 to age 20 that I was kind of in and out of that diet program. And I was never able to do it. You know, it would be like a day or two, and then I would respond with like a week or two long binge, and then I'd do it for like a week or two, and then I'd respond to like a month or two long binge. So I was never a successful anorexic, and I was never like good at, so my bulimia is exercise bulimia, and I was never wanting to exercise. Like in ninth grade, I faked an injury so I didn't have to run the mile to get an A in gym and all this stuff. So it was, you know, it was my dream that I could be a successful anorexic. It was my dream that I could, you know, successfully purge with exercise everything I wanted to purge with exercise. It was my dream to have the body that would allow me to purge in the other way, but I just was physically incapable of doing that. And so, you know, repeat this whole cycle of like, let me restrict, and then let me respond with a binge that's five times longer than the restricting period, and, you know, continuing on that cycle, all while, you know, getting it from various different angles on the outside, and then eventually from various different angles on the inside. You have to exercise this off. Don't you know you have to exercise this off? You know, it still is like a verbiage of my father, like, oh, you know, we're hungry for lunch, but let's take a walk before, and all this stuff. And so I ended up studying abroad. And is that my 5 minutes? Great, thank you. So I ended up studying, great, this is right what happened. I ended up studying abroad in Germany when I was 19. And that summer I came back from Germany at my highest weight. And it was the point where, like, I was afraid for my family to see me when they picked me up at the airport. I was afraid to go back to school. I, you know, was, like, confounded to clothes that were going to stretch or be loose or whatever. And that was the time where I was like, okay, this is it, you know, 2009 to 2010, this is going to be my year to do this diet actually, right? I'm going to actually do this diet. I'm going to go to the meetings on Saturdays. I'm going to, you know, this is my plan. I'm going to tell all my roommates so that they all know what I'm doing, and I'll have to do it. And I did it. I did it. I lost 60 pounds on this weigh and pay diet. I learned how to only eat lettuce. I learned how to exercise for 3 hours a day and not be good enough still. I learned how to become the star of a diet club. I learned how to lose my period. I learned how to find the most secretive ways to get enough food, but actually not be getting enough food. I learned how to punish myself after not eating on the diet. I learned what it felt like to wear a size zero. I learned that even though I was in the body that I had always wanted, I was still fat as hell up here. I was still not worthy of love. I was still not dateable. I was still not successful. I didn't believe anything you were telling me about what I was doing. And so really the only place to go from there is back into the food. And, you know, I, right before I started kind of like getting a little bit lenient with the sugar-free candy or whatever, I hit my goal weight, and it wasn't small enough. And so I decided I would, so like in this weigh and pay, you would like, if you exercise, then you like earned the right to eat more, basically. It's really just like, I mean, they should call it exercise bulimics training center. And like, I was like, oh, I can eat the stuff that I've exercised off. Why would I do that if I'm trying to lose weight? So I would have the star system where like I would get a star if I didn't eat my exercise food. Basically. And so it would it had turned into, you know, I would get weighed on Saturdays, and I had this exercise routine that I would do on Friday nights, and then I would have this dinner that I would have on Friday nights, and then I would have this certain amount of water that I would drink on Friday nights, and then I would walk 3 miles to the place where I would get weighed, and by the time I got there, I had to take the biggest poop so that I would be the lightest I could possibly be by the time I stepped on the scale. And then on Saturday night, I would go eat a giant thing of ice cream, because I was allowed to eat a giant thing of ice cream in a restaurant that serves ice cream because, hey, I'm thin. Nobody's going to judge me for ordering a giant thing of ice cream. And then the giant thing of ice cream turned into a super giant thing of ice cream eventually, and then a super giant thing of ice cream turned into an ice cream binge, and it just kind of went on and on from there. And, you know, I studied abroad, and I brought a scale with me instead of a laptop, and like, it was just, I sent like an $80 package to Tahiti full of like food from this diet program so that I had it, and then it didn't show up, and like, you know. So that's me and my exercise bulimia. And really there's only one place to go from there, like I said, which is the food. So I spent from October to February just like gaining that 60 pounds back, basically. Not showing up to school, having countless affairs to try to feel like my body was okay. You know, rebuying back all the sizes that I had gotten rid of. Still hanging on to those clothes that I wanted. And I'm gonna note that, like, when I lost my period, I was in the middle of my healthy weight range. So I went to the doctor, and they didn't ask me if I was maybe not eating enough. They didn't ask me if I was maybe exercising too much, because the number on the scale was healthy. And that's so important for me to know, because that range is bullshit if I'm actually killing myself, or if I'm actually healthy, you know? If I'm actually being abstinent, that range doesn't matter if I'm listening to my higher power. And that's so important for me to know, and to really hang on to. So what happened was, I had heard about OA in the diet program that I had been because somebody had shared about it in a diet meeting, and I was like, oh, you loser. Like, you just don't know how to do the tracking right, or whatever. And then, of course, I saw her at a retreat one day, and then we just like wept in each other's arms, and neither of us are in that diet program anymore. But yeah, on Valentine's Day 2011, I came to I Love OA Night, and I heard my story 3 times from 3 totally different people. And I just wept and wept. Thanks, 10 minutes. This woman next to me was like crying also because of something else. And then she asked me what meetings I went to, and I was like, oh, I'm a newcomer. And then she said, well, do you want a newcomer's packet? And I was like, yes, maybe. And here I am thinking, like, okay, I'm going to get the packet from OA that I got from my diet program that I can just take home and, like, figure out how to do food their way or whatever. And so she picks up this envelope, and she walks to the opposite side of the room, and she gives it to somebody else. And I'm like, what is going on? And then the guy that she gives it to writes something on it, and then he passes it to the person next to him, and that person writes something on it, and it goes, and this, there were like 60 people at this event, right? And it goes, it gets to me, and the person next to me hands it to me, and the woman who's not my sponsor, by the way, who had gotten the packet for me, took it out of my hands and passed it around. It was like, at this point I wasn't confused. Like, I figured I had, for the most part, like, got what was happening. But I was amazed that here were like 60 people in this room that I've never met before writing something on this packet that's then gonna be given to me. And it blew my mind, because if you asked me to tell you 2 names of the people who attended my diet club meeting every day or every week for like 1.5 years, I probably couldn't have told you. And, you know, that was maybe within my first 20 minutes in OA, and it was at that moment that I was like, oh, wow, this whole thing is about connecting. This whole thing is about like getting beneath each other and like helping each other rise up. And it's not about like me being the star, and it's not about you being the star, and it's not about like, you know, let's all applaud for this person because they achieved this thing. It's like about the connection. And so this woman says, like, call me if you have any questions, and she ended up offering to be my sponsor that night over the phone. And, you know, what do I want to say about my early time in OA? So it took me 3 months to get abstinent. And I thought, and I'll get into this in my last part of my share, but I have this, I'm tapping into like another level of my soul right now. And I had this huge breakdown yesterday. And my sponsor was like, if you do the spiritual work, you'll get to like see these people and like smile at them and say like, how are you? And there are these like people that I have this huge like PTSD response to. And I said to her, that sounds impossible to me. And she said to me, well, when I suggested you didn't eat sugar, that seemed impossible to you. And that was really helpful for me because, like, I remember the first time it was suggested to me that maybe I had a sugar problem. I thought that you were saying, like, hey, I'm going to chop off both your legs and then we're going to set you up to run a marathon. You know? I didn't know how that could be possible. And but what I did was I worked 6 of the 8 tools every single day, which, by the way, I also thought had been impossible, but it happened for me. And now I tell my sponsees 7 of the 9, because there are 9 now. And my experience has been through going to, I did like a phone meeting every morning, I made an outreach call, I was in touch with my sponsor, I did service, you know, like through doing so many tools, my disease didn't have a fighting chance, and abstinence just happened to me. And then I was able to work the steps, so I don't want to make it seem like the tools can keep you abstinent, because that is certainly not my experience. And you know, what keeps me abstinent is like dealing with like the core issues, which the steps get at, not the tools. But the tools were able to keep me occupied for long enough that I wasn't picking up food, which was exactly what I needed. So that got me calling a lot of people. And today, if I don't make an outreach call, like, I need to make 15 because something is seriously up if I don't find myself making a program call at some point during the day. But yeah, before I get into like unity stuff, what I want to say about my past 4 years in this program is that I am a friend that can be counted on. I'm a daughter, both by blood and by choice, of people who are genuinely proud of me. I'm happy with my body most of the time. Thank you, 5 minutes left. And when I'm not, I know what to do about it, and I know it's a lie. I'm marryable, apparently, because I'm engaged. I never, never, never stop working on whatever comes up. And that, for me, I think is the core thing, is that like when something comes up, like I know exactly what to do. I have like 800 people I can call, you know, and there's always work to be done. I read, write, meditate, pray every morning before I eat breakfast or put clothes on. I write a 11-step inventory every night, and I go to like 5 meetings a week between my 2 fellowships, and I have a sponsor in each one. And yeah, I sponsor some amazing women, and this works. But here's why it works. And my sponsor just pointed this out to me like 15 minutes ago. But it says on page 17, and there's a solution. The feeling of having shared in a common peril is one element in the powerful cement which binds us, but that in itself would never have held us together as we are now joined. The tremendous fact for every one of us is that we have discovered a common solution. We have a way out on which we can absolutely agree and upon which we can join in brotherly and harmonious action. And so this is my experience. My experience is, I'm going to tell you right now, and this is anorexic speaking and compulsive overeater speaking, that yesterday for the first time in my life, I cried while I ate lunch. I've never cried and ate at the same time, because my experience is my emotions are too big for me to eat, or my eating is too big for my emotions. And I was like I'm tapping into some deep shit right now, and I was like crying for 9 hours yesterday. And I did my work, and I ate lunch, and I ate dinner, and like I did all this stuff. But another thing, and that's just to kind of paint the picture of like what was going on for me yesterday. But what I did is, like, if you look at my text message register from yesterday, it's like, oh, wait, Al-Anon, 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 oh, wait. Like, I reached out to everybody I knew. I know how to, like, text somebody right now or call somebody right now and be like, this is what I need. Are you available to give this? Before I start taking over your time with, like, crying or like demands of your attention, like, hey, I'm having a breakdown right now, are you available? And like, if you're not, cool, like, it's Friday, you probably have something going on, and whatever. And but the reason why this is really important to me is I also had non-12-step recovery friends who I was able to reach out to, because I know that they share a common solution as mine of being vulnerable and showing up to work on their shit and like having a like spiritual, like soulful solution to their issues, which are not, you know, out here somewhere. And like, I had a non-recovery friend come over to my house yesterday to just like be with me for a little bit of time, because that's what I needed. But the point is that she didn't have to be a compulsive overeater. She had to have had a common experience of having a giant soul shift to get over trauma or to get over suffering or to get over depression that was able to give me the support that I needed. Now, it really helps if I can call you and be like, hey, I'm crying through my lunch right now, but I'm eating, and you know what that means because you've had that experience too. But like, I'm not in the problem zone anymore. Like, that is not where I want to hang out. I want to hang out in the solution zone. And so that was really helpful. And then I also want to read the for today, because a huge part of my recovery over the past 6 months has been tapping into vulnerability. I'm a performer. I grew up like being on stage. I still do stuff on stage. Like, I clearly have no issues with public speaking. Like, I like you looking at me, you know, like, I like the praise. I want to be a leader. Like, I just want to be perfect, which, guess what? I'm an addict. So that makes a lot of sense. And also, I'm not. But my sponsorship pattern early on was like, I'm going to tell you exactly how to do this. And if you don't do this, I'm going to give you sass. And not purposefully shame you, but end up shaming you. Anyway, so here's my new experience over the past 6 months, and then I'll wrap up. It is in our faults and failings, not in our virtues, that we touch one another and find sympathy. This guy's name is Jerome K. Jerome. That's awesome. In my search for a cure for my illness, I encountered many fine doctors and others who were sincerely interested in helping me, and they did help. I lost weight. But when I regained weight, I could only see my former helpers as superior beings with no discernible human feelings to compare to mine. In OA, my would-be helpers were, by their own admission, overeaters. In unmistakable terms, they described the compulsion, the fat, the shame, the despair, and the spiritual recovery. My own recovery began that day. Today, I know that I must give to another compulsive overeater in the same way that others gave to me by first revealing my own failings. For today, in sponsoring and 12-step work, I remember to talk about some of the defects I still have, as well as those that have been removed. A sponsor with no apparent faults needs help. And that, like, that is my spiritual lesson of the past 6 months, is that the best way to lead is through vulnerability, because that unites us, and then we can, you know, work together toward a common solution. Like, it's not your fault that you don't know how to change the oil, and I do. I'm just going to show you how to change the oil. I'm going to tell you about, like, when I do it, it gets messy or whatever. because like that's gonna allow us to run together instead of me like, you know, being your like army coach or whatever. That was 20 minutes, right? Okay, great. I'm done. Thanks for listening, and I'm gonna go on my trip now.